Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, should be our best show of the week. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. In beautiful Los Angeles, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. The legend, the stud muffin, Al Michaels. The ageless Al Michaels in 1 hour from now. If you're listening on radio, the voice itself. One of the great voices in American sports of my lifetime. Joy Taylor joining me as well. Got a Green Bay Packer kind of green thing going
is that
on.
What it is?
It's a little eagle. It's actually, you know what? It's Eagles.
It's closer to the Eagles, yeah.
It's closer to the Eagles. I like it a lot. And you've got your 1958 glamorous Hollywood.
You like this hairstyle.
I think you can do. I've never ever met a person who has every day a different look.
You know what? It's Nasheen. She's an amazing hairstylist. She does both our hair every day, and yeah, she does a great job.
Yeah, mine's gray and floppy. There's not much to do here. It's great to have you part of the show. So tomorrow night it is it'll be really the best game this weekend is actually on Fox tomorrow night.
Yes.
It's Carson Wentz and Aaron Rodgers. They're kind of similar guys. A little bit of baggage. We don't know. They always get along with teammates. We think they're great, but should win a little more. But I think it's very fascinating with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think this is a huge game for Aaron Rodgers. They're undefeated. Aaron could lose. It's okay. Carson Wentz, it's a very big game. But for about 8 to 10 years, Aaron Rodgers, and I judge this a lot, got me to a television set. When I wake up on Sunday morning, who gets me to a TV set? And Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. And I'd said this before. Tom's better. Aaron was more fun to watch than Tom Brady. But I turn on my TV now. Patrick Mahomes is more dynamic than Aaron Rodgers. Baker Mayfield is more controversial. Lamar Jackson's more fascinating. Tom Brady wins more. And Dak Prescott is more debated. Aaron Rodgers is transitioning. The Packers now don't need him to play great to win. They don't rely on him offensively as much. They run the football. The management has pushed back a little bit on his condescending occasional arrogance. Even Aaron Rodgers said something a day ago. He knows he's transitioning.
It's time for us to do our part on offense moving forward. We're going to play some, a stretch of really good football teams. And at some point, we can't expect our defense to shut everybody down. They have been. But at some point, the offense is going to have to wake up and start making some plays.
When is the last time Aaron Rodgers said, the defense is great. We're not getting it done. It's a new Green Bay Packer organization. You saw this at the end with Brett Favre. And I'm not saying Aaron's retiring in a couple years, but I'm not the only person to see this. He was the voice and face of State Farm for 8 years. Patrick Mahomes now joins him on the commercial. The Cleveland Browns, controversial Baker Mayfield, not Freddie Kitchens, have been on two national TV games. We're in the transition period. Lamar's more fascinating. Patrick's more dynamic. Baker's more controversial. Dak's more debated. And Tom wins more. And statistically, Drew Brees is better. That's not a knock, but this past weekend, when I got up on Sunday morning, I wanted to watch Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. I did. And then I turned on Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen, and I couldn't turn the game off for 90 minutes. And then Sunday night, Baker Mayfield got me to a television. It's not that Aaron Rodgers isn't great, but what I'm loyal to, I always say this, I'm going to lose weight. How come by February my gym is still empty? Everybody goes in January for a New Year's resolution. By February, my gym's empty. It's the same seven of us working out. Is that I am loyal to what I consume. And what I'm consuming now, tomorrow night is the first time in over a year, maybe 2 years, that the game I can't wait to watch and the quarterback I can't wait to watch is Aaron Rodgers. And I think everybody now realizes some of these previous problems are certainly on Mike McCarthy. But as Sam Monson said yesterday at profootball.com, PFF.com, and they just look at data, folks, some of it's on Aaron.
I think their defense has dramatically improved, but the offense, not that much has changed. Rodgers has still remained the same kind of guy. He's still tending towards The conservative end of the spectrum, he's not putting the ball in harm's way that much. And, you know, that offense has not transformed him the way a lot of people thought it might. I think Aaron Rodgers is a bigger root cause of the issues there than people have thought over the past few seasons.
Still love Aaron, but tomorrow night will be the first time in a couple of years when that's... I want to watch Aaron Rodgers more than any quarterback this weekend. By the way, second Russell Wilson Sunday against the next Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, to me, is fascinating. We got a big change coming in the NFL. These quarterbacks, they're a little smaller. They run a little more. It's very fascinating. So I want to talk about Dak Prescott. And I've always said this about Dak. I didn't buy him initially. I did not officially buy into him until they gave him Amari Cooper last year. And he went 7-1 down the stretch and played very well in big spots in the fourth, where I was like, and I think I'm pretty good at this quarterback thing. You know, generally I've missed on a couple. But most of the time, you know, the guys I didn't like, even when they were winning, Vince Young, Tim Tebow, I was like, I don't buy it. I think I've mostly been right on this stuff. But I didn't buy Dak until at the end of last year. He went 7-1 with Amari Cooper, who's a real grown-up, is a real man. He's not a child. It's not some of the Dez Bryant nonsense you're dealing with. And he won with him. And I'm like, okay, it's not about Zeke. This is Dak's team, and you give Dak legitimate outside perimeter players who work as hard as Dak, and you can win games. But I'm looking at some stats with Dak, and it's interesting. So Dak's average, his first 3 years in the league, his average season, he threw for 3,600 yards, 22 TDs, 8 picks. That's very Marcus Mariota. That's not what you want. This season, he's on pace to throw for 4,900 yards, 48 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. And what does it tell you that he doesn't have a contract? It tells you that Jerry and Stephen Jones, they didn't know this was possible. And let me defend them. I can certainly make a legitimate argument that Jerry and Stephen Jones have done a better job drafting talent over the last 5 years than any organization in football. Their O-line's great. Their D-line's good. They've got a corner. They got Zeke. They found Dak in the fourth round. I mean, they got stars everywhere. They have the best young linebackers in the NFL, two of them. So it's not like Jerry and Steven don't know talent. They've been exceptional at moving off players, drafting players, acquiring free agents, and giving up the right picks. But if they'd have known Dak was this, they'd have paid him a year ago. Because they paid Jalen Smith early, and they paid Zeke 2 years early, and they paid DeMarcus Lawrence early, and they're going to pay Van Der Esch early. They didn't even pay their quarterback early because they didn't think this was possible. And that's the real thing. Listen, Philadelphia, here's the thing with teams. Teams see all the practice footage. They see the interactions. They see the 22 film. Philadelphia, even with Carson Wentz hurt and losing, signed him early because they're watching all the film. Jerry and Steven have watched every Dak practice, every piece of 22 film. And they wake up this morning, and those are $35 million a year stats. And they didn't want to pay him more than 28. And it tells you Dak is a surprise. Now, by the way, what does this tell you about Dak? I think I'm pretty good at this quarterback thing. I think it tells you about Dak. Baltimore did not pay Joe Flacco, and they got burned. Why? Because Baltimore watched Joe Flacco. And Joe Flacco had a winning playoff record. Joe Flacco wasn't a bum. Joe Flacco was winning divisions. Joe Flacco had a winning playoff record. He had a winning road playoff record. And Baltimore, one of the smartest organizations, also like Dallas, drafts the hell out of this league. They didn't give Joe Flacco money. Why? Because they watched all the practices and they watched all the film. And they're like, we think it's the roster, 65, 70% and 30% Flacco. And they got burned. And eventually they were paying him too much and moved off him. And so what Jerry is telling you, without telling you, is they think he's a little more Flacco than he is Carson Wentz. And it's very hard to doubt the Dallas Cowboys when it comes to young talent. They're great at it. I mean, Jesus, they've had the best offensive line in the league for 6 years. They have the best young linebackers. They have New England doesn't have this many star players. Kansas City doesn't have this many star players. So that doesn't mean that Dak's not really talented. But it's telling you, they rolled the dice on this, and in the same reason Baltimore stalled and got burned is the same reason Dallas did, is that when you watch the film and you watch the practice, you know, it doesn't blow you away. It doesn't. And quarterback is hard, and I've always told you my favorite part of Dak is the podium. That's really my favorite part of Dak, is that he's great at the podium. He sounds like a leader. He had to deal with the nonsense with Dez and replacing Tony Romo and the anthem controversy and the Zeke judicial issues. I mean, he had a lot of noise, and he handled it like a good CEO would, a good grown-up would. And, I mean, this is why I love Russell Wilson. He had to deal with Richard Sherman and these defensive players dropping a story at the other network I used to work at, and they got banged in the press, and nobody was, and then he had to deal with that Super Bowl interception and all the fallout, and Russell Wilson was like, you know, the man upstairs is the one that controls this. I'm good. And so it's just interesting with Dak is, as smart as Jerry and Steven have been, they didn't think this was possible, or they would have paid him, because they're going to get burned financially. They're probably going to pay a quarterback who I like love money. Really, I mean, I you want to pay the quarterbacks you love. Mahomes, love money. Russell Wilson, love money. Most guys in this league, you want to pay like money. I like you a lot, and I'm going to pay you like money, but they're going to pay him love money. Kirk Cousins got love money. They liked him. Matt Ryan got love money. They liked him. Russell Wilson, I can pay love money to. Brady, I could pay love money to. Mahomes, Andrew Luck, I can pay love money. I've said with Dak, I'd rather pay, I like the like money. But what it's really telling you is they didn't see it. They saw Vander Esch, 8-man high school football in Boise State. They saw a star. Dak, they didn't draft him to the fourth round, and they still didn't buy him when he was winning. Much like Baltimore and Flacco.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I wake up on a Sunday morning. Patrick Mahomes is the most dynamic. Lamar's the most fascinating. Dak's the most debated. Tom Brady's the legend. Baker's the most controversial. Kyler is this weekend facing Russell Wilson, so Russell's facing the next Russell. I haven't woken up in 2 years on a Sunday and thought, I got to watch Aaron Rodgers. Now, tomorrow feels like the first time where it's like, oh, okay, that's the best game on the docket. Via the Coward Global Satellite Network, Nick Wright, my buddy, is joining us. Nick, I feel like Aaron's in a transition period. Injuries, losses, arrogance, that on Sunday, he's not who I wake up to see. It's Patrick. And I'm not banging on Aaron, but I do feel like they run more, it's more defense. He's no longer the golden boy. Is that fair?
Well, that part's fair, but that no quarterback at any point in NFL history would be the golden boy if they were up against this version of Patrick Mahomes, who just happens to be playing the position at the highest level it's ever been played by any person. It's not hyperbole. It's not recency bias. It's obvious to the stats and to your eyes. But I think this is more about Rodgers and less about Mahomes. So set aside maybe the most talented quarterback ever, Mahomes, to talk about maybe the second most talented quarterback ever, Aaron Rodgers. The numbers are on your side here, Colin. This year, while the Packers are 3-0, they're averaging 270 yards of offense, 19 points, and they're 30th in the league in third down conversions. Maybe I am holding on to a lost time, but I am still holding on to hope and belief that Aaron Rodgers is not out of his prime, that Aaron Rodgers missed a preseason game he was supposed to play in because his back tightened up, then was supposed to play in the next one, but the field in Canada was shoddy, that he's a little rusty, there's a new offense, they're still getting these young wide receivers into the flow of things. The reason I picked the Packers to go to the Super Bowl was because I loved their defense, and I believe Rodgers at some point this year will get back to being Aaron Rodgers. But much like I heard you say of Jay Gruden, I can't prove it, I just believe it. I can't prove in the last 3 years that Aaron Rodgers is still one of the three best quarterbacks in football. I just truly believe it, and I think we'll see it starting Thursday night.
New England seemed unbeatable, but might as well gloat. You pick Buffalo to make the playoffs. I have them number 7 yes. I think in the history of the NFL, if you have a great staff, they do. If you have a really good defense, they do. And if you've upgraded your weakness, O-line, you're fighting for a playoff spot. I think they can beat New England this weekend. So go ahead and gloat. What did you see that most of us did not?
Well, I saw an easy path to 3-0, which with a young team, with a very raw quarterback, getting the season started off right is critically important. I saw what the whole world sees right now, which is 9 wins going to get you in the playoffs in this AFC. I saw Chargers and Steelers teams that I didn't think would win their division and I didn't think would be wild card teams. So who are you going to put there? And now you do have a really intriguing matchup with the Patriots. The Bills can't win the division, obviously. But can they beat the Patriots at home? Maybe. The Pats have been great this year, no doubt. They've also played literally the worst schedule imaginable outside of the Dallas Cowboys in the league thus far. So there's a reason that Bill Belichick didn't want to cut Antonio Brown even after those witness intimidation texts came out. There's a reason they let him practice that Friday and then, for some reason or another, waited to cut him until Friday afternoon. It's because he knows. Offensive line, IR center, IR left tackle, fullback on IR, first round pick wide receiver on IR. Edelman now's got a chest injury. Josh Gordon's banged up. They thought they needed Antonio Brown. The defense is spectacular in New England. The offense, not what it was last year. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if this is the Bills up 20-17 going into the fourth quarter, and we see if Brady can pull it out.
Now, whether or not, you know, I've always said Cam is Westbrook. I can't deny his iconic stature, his talent. I'd pay to watch him play. He's had one great season where he got his team to the finals, but I don't think he elevates players around him. So instead of arguing, I don't like Cam as much as you do, I'm gonna pose this, that it is getting easier for the new owner of Carolina to move off Cam Newton. Kyle Allen's good. Cam's not winning, injuries or not. You could bail on him after the season, and it wouldn't cost you a ton. It wouldn't be a ridiculous cap hit. They've got a bunch of young receivers and backs. Kyle Allen's young. And the new owner doesn't give a rip about an MVP season when he was a co-owner of the Steelers. Could I at least argue that if Kyle Allen, over the next 6 games, and look at it, he faces a lot of average secondaries, goes 5-1, you can at least in Carolina bring back Cam, end of the year, tougher schedule struggles. It's getting easier, Nick, to move off Cam in the next year.
Of course it's getting easier, and we have to see if Cam gets healthy. But you threw in there at the end a yada yada that I'm not ready to just concede. Kyle Allen's going 5-1. Kyle Allen, who the Carolina Panthers had so much faith in after having him in the building last year, after he starts week 17, they go out and draft Will Greer in, I think, the 4th round of this year's draft. I've never seen a quarterback, especially not a blue-chip prospect, Kyle Allen had been a blue-chip prospect since high school, get so much run over one really good game against one really bad defense in Arizona. Let me see Kyle Allen go 5-1 first. Now, Carolina might want to move off of Cam, and if he doesn't get healthy, then I will understand that to a degree. But we do not live in a world with enough quality quarterbacks where Cam Newton is not clearly, when healthy, an upper half, at the very least, starting quarterback in this league. And Kyle Allen might be the 3rd best quarterback on the Panthers roster. Maybe they discovered something in the 6th round a couple years ago, and he's just now blossoming into the player that once was the number one high school football player in the country. But I think nationally, and certainly regionally in the Carolinas, a lot of the Kyle Allen love is actually Cam Newton hate being disguised as Kyle Allen love.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if people really love this guy or they're just ready and wanting someone different than Cam.
Does it bother you before you go? I'm looking at the PFF rankings this morning. They ranked all the quarterbacks. And it must irk you to realize it's almost Tom Brady is number 1 and Patrick Mahomes is 6. Does that make you angry?
I like the folks at PFF. I know some of those guys. I think it's a great story. Some blokes from Ireland start a company. It's now a multi-conglomerate. I think it's great. But I don't have a lot of rules in life, but here's one of them. If I have a fancy algorithm, a nice, cool formula, and I input all my data, and it spits out to me that there have been 5 quarterbacks better than Patrick Mahomes, you throw out the algorithm. This is along the same lines – of your former employer once upon a time created a new way to grade quarterbacks, and it was going to revolutionize things. And the algorithm they had said the third greatest quarterback game of all time was a Charlie Batch game where he had 160 yards passing. That's when you know there's a fly in the soup, people. And if Patrick Mahomes, having played the Jags and the Ravens and being first in rating, first in yards, first in touchdowns, first in everything, is the sixth best quarterback, your rating system stinks. And I say that respectfully.
Nick Ryan, first things first. You have yourself a good Wednesday there, chap. It's good seeing you, buddy.
You too. Talk to you later.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So PFF did come out with it. It's all over the debate shows in America today and all over the talk shows. PFF, profootball.com, profootballfocus.com. They rate every quarterback. And again, they do this on big time throw percentage and turnover worthy plays and adjusted completion rate. This is film stuff. This is film. They grade every offensive lineman, every quarterback, and it's not every interception's the quarterback's fault. They play calling matters, where you throw it, how hard the throw is, how good the defense. I mean, they really grade everything. So the first thing is, pat myself in the back, they have all the guys I like near the top and the guys that I defend. Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, and Derek Carr are all the top seven. So the guys I like and the guys I don't like are all at the very, very bottom. Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston, Trubisky, Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, there I feel pretty good about it, right? Like the guys I'm not into, and some of those guys are winning games, they have at the bottom. And the guys I like and defend, Derek Carr. I don't understand why the Raiders are talking about bailing on Derek Carr. He's good. I don't get why you don't get Deshaun Watson, people. He's good. So, but what really jumped out to me is that right in the middle of the pack, Baker Mayfield is still ahead of Lamar Jackson. And that goes counterintuitive to what you would think, right? One's winning, one's losing. One doesn't throw any interceptions. One's a turnover machine. And there's been this whole thing, you know, how can anybody doubt Lamar Jackson? And how can anybody? And one of the reasons I like PFF, because it's not about agendas. It's not about nonsense. It's just about data. And I'm a data guy. I'm not into, you know, media falling in love and media has agendas and media wants this guy. And good God, the media just couldn't get over Russell Westbrook. The data was right in front of you. And then one day he loses a playoff series and the entire country's like, all right, Colin's a jerk, but he's right on that one. Just watch the data, get out of the emotion business, stop rooting for people, players, and cities. And so what they're telling you is also Josh Allen is 21st. So what they're telling you that Josh Allen and Lamar are 5-1 and the numbers are great, but PFF's like, this is not Baker's fault. And that's what I said yesterday. Listen, of course, Lamar and Josh deserve some credit for what they're doing. And Baker deserves some criticism for what he's not doing. But this is a Freddie Kitchen issue. This is a John Dorsey issue. I have banged on Baker Mayfield more than any sports talk show host in America. People get mad at me for this. But when I watch Cleveland, there are limitations to Baker Mayfield. He's a 5'11.5", 4'8", 40 guy. He's not that great of an athlete. I think he's a pocket thrower, but he's small. So he runs outside a lot, and he's not very fast. I ran a 4.7940 in high school. I'm not joking. He runs a 4.84 with better nutrition and better strength training than I had 35 years ago. He's not that great of an athlete. I don't think he's as good an athlete as Johnny Manziel. I don't think he's as good an athlete as Tim Tebow. And I never thought Tebow was a great athlete. I thought he was a great kid, a great leader. So he's not Dak. I don't think he's not nearly as good as Trubisky as an athlete. He's not Andrew Luck. We know he's not Cam or Big Ben. I just don't think he's that good of an athlete. I think he's a small, average 4.8 40 guy. So I've been banging on Baker for years. But what PFF is telling you, Lamar and Josh are getting a ton of help here, and Baker's getting none. And that's what they're telling you. And Peter King addressed this yesterday in Freddie Kitchens.
If I could give Freddie Kitchens one piece of advice, if he wants to call the plays, then he needs to give the authority of things like clock management and some other things. He needs to think about giving that away. And I'm fine with him holding on to offensive play calling. He's good at it. He was terrible on Sunday because I think he's thinking about too many things. A year ago, he was the running backs coach. And now he's got the biggest job of them all. And he's got the weight of great expectations on his shoulders.
So it's kind of PFF is telling you our system and you know, the guys that look like they're good. And PFF and I don't agree. They don't like Darnold nearly as much as they like Baker. And I like Darnold over Baker because I think he's bigger, stronger, more athletic. And I think he's, frankly, I think he's more of a grown-up. It's why I said this 2 weeks ago, and everybody, I got so much crap on this. I said Dak's better than Baker. Everybody's like, how can you say that? Well, Dak's bigger. He's more athletic. He's stronger. Way incredibly coachable. Not that Baker isn't, but I can tell you this. Dak is coachable, and I don't think Dak is going to have to overcome constant ownership front office mayhem to succeed. So I said a week ago, I said Dak's better than Baker Mayfield. It is remarkable to me on Baker, and I'm not blaming him for all this stuff, and you know I've been tough on him. Like Tim Tebow is not an NFL quarterback. I said it, you hated me, I was right. Vince Young was not really a guy I'd build around. I think Baker's better than Vince Young and better than Tebow and better than Manziel. But the problem with Baker is you have to be so good to overcome the nonsense with Cleveland that I'm not sure Dak could win in Cleveland. I'm not sure. Seriously, I think Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, it could be man overboard. I think Baker's got all sorts of accuracy talent. But this is why I didn't put him in the top 10 and why I've said about Baker. If Baker and Sam Darnold are equally talented, Sam will be better because you think the Jets are dysfunctional. By Cleveland standards, the Jets are highly functional. They really are. They've made the playoffs. They've made the AFC Championship with Mark Sanchez. I mean, the Jets had Herm Edwards, won playoff games. Rex Ryan won playoff games. So this PFF is telling you it's not all Baker here. It's not. It's, and I believe they're right on that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
All right, let's bring him on. He's a multi-time national sportscaster of the year winner, the voice of NBC Sports, Al Michaels, who thank God lives two decades doing Monday Night Football. Now Sunday Night Football, as my wife always says, if you're as good as Al the last 5-10 years of your career, I won't leave you. That's what she says. Al, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you, Colin?
I'm doing great. By the way, in 1974, you were the next great young announcer. You were doing Cincinnati Reds baseball. You were probably 12. Somehow you got that job. Then you left it to double your money, go to San Francisco. Marty Brenneman took over for you, and he's retiring.
I tripled the money to go to San Francisco. So I did the Reds in 71.
Pull that mic closer, Al.
I will.
Yeah.
I tripled the salary to go to San Francisco. So I left one of the great baseball teams in history.
Rose,
Bench, Morgan, Perez, Sparky Anderson, Ken Griffey Sr. coming up as a kid.
I lived in Grayland, Washington. That was my favorite team.
They were fantastic.
They had like Hall of Famers everywhere.
I'm there 3 years. Went to the World Series in 72, the playoffs in 73, upset by the Mets and the Pete Rose Bud Harrelson, fracas. And then, so I leave, and I leave Marty with this great team, and I go to this moribund franchise.
They were horrible.
But they were terrible. And then Marty's doing the World Series in 75 and 76. So I was there three. Marty's there 15 times as long as I was. And, you know, God bless him. The guy did a tremendous job through the years. You know as well as anybody, there's a connection between the audience and the announcer. You take Vince Scully.
In Los Angeles.
The top of the top. 67 years. So you go through every generation. I mean, Vinny, the father, the son, the grandfather, the grandson. Marty, pretty much the same thing in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
He's been, you know, they had some great teams. They had some bad teams over a 46-year period.
But Jack Buck and Marty Brenneman and Ernie Harwell have been the summer voices for 50 years.
Right.
They were 50 years. Jack Buck, Joe's dad. Right. Ernie in Detroit was a legend. And
sure.
There you go. So now I got to ask you, Al, I have been Sunday night was just terrific, and I've been marginally critical of Baker Mayfield.
Right,
but I can't blame him for all the issues. But when you went to Cleveland, and Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth don't do Cleveland much, give me the environment, give me the moment. Your takeaway now: the game's over. Tell the audience what that, because Cleveland doesn't host Sunday night football games.
Only every 11 years. I mean, the last time we were there was 2008. It was a Pittsburgh Cleveland game. Hadn't been back since. I mean, over that period of time, how many Patriot games have we done? Like 30. So the town was crazy because, first of all, the expectations, as you know, in Cleveland were so high, so gigantically high. And then you start out, and of course, they laid an egg on opening day in the fourth quarter against Tennessee, came back, beat the undermanned Jets. So everybody's pretty stoked. But I will say this. I mean, their defense did a fantastic job the other night. Chris and I, Collinsworth and I, were talking about the fact we had never, ever done a game where the entire secondary was inactive. They were all hurt.
Yes.
Every one of them. You look at the flip card, the top four guys inactive that night. And they're calling up guys from the practice squad and getting guys from the Raiders, and who got an interception the other night. So they did, I think Steve Wilks did a really good job, the defensive coordinator,
yeah,
in keeping the Rams as close as he did. I liked Mayfield a lot. We had not met him. We didn't know what to expect.
What did you get?
I liked him a lot. Really sharp, clear-eyed, focused. I think he's a guy, he's got a great future. But he sees a lot of things. He's really, really bright and fun, too. And he has a good sense of humor. We laugh with these guys, and it was great. And we're able to get him going. And same thing with Freddie Kitchens. The great thing about doing a game like that is we know the Patriots, we know the Cowboys, we know the Packers inside out, all the guys. We didn't know any of these people. So we knew Beckham because we'd had Beckham for a number of years in New York. But it was fun to be with him. And I'll tell you what, we had Myles Garrett in the meeting,
boy,
too.
He's a player.
I know, but what's amazing to me, Colin, is this is a guy leading the league in penalties. People are thinking, come on, putting his body on top of Simeon in New York, and, Simeon's gone for the season. Comes in very reflective, very quiet, very intelligent.
Yeah.
Not at all what we expected. So it's great fun to do teams that we haven't done in a long time.
Now, you do now. This week is fantastic. Yeah. The Saints defense is real. Teddy Bridgewater's he's 13-6 in his last 19 starts, mm-hmm, and it's Cowboys. So when you sit down, I tend to think you sit down with quarterbacks, and you're probably sitting down with Dak, and Jerry sneaks into the room and just wants to talk to you. What is your relationship with Jerry? Because you've done so many Cowboy games.
Sure.
And, Jerry's a businessman, and you've always had the Cronkies and the Jerrys, that you, yep, know those guys, and you've been around. You've both been doing this league forever.
Yeah.
It's fun. This is the older Jerry. These are the twilight year Jerry. Mm-hmm. Has he changed from 15 years ago?
Not a lot. And he's one of my favorite people. And I have just the utmost admiration, because here's a guy who had a vision. And I met him 30 years ago. I met him at an owner's meeting in 1989. He had just bought the team. He's taking all this heat in Dallas because he's fired Tom Landry.
Yes, I remember
and
that.
He brought in Jimmy Johnson. And I went up and introduced myself at the Palm Desert or Palm Springs Marriott. And I said, hey, by the way, I said, I've been going to Dallas for a few years now on Monday night, and all they do is write about it's time for Landry to go. It's time, for, hey, send him off into the sunset. You did it, and now you're getting all this heat. With Jerry, all the years we've known him, he had us to dinner at his house a couple of times. He had the model of the stadium that he wanted to build. Back in the 90s, and he wanted to build it in downtown Dallas. Couldn't get that done. Obviously gets it done in Arlington. And to me, that stadium is now 10 years old. It was opened in 2009. Colin, it's as beautiful as it was on opening day. I think it's the model. I mean, the stadium that's going to come up here in Los Angeles will probably be the all-timer that Stan Kroenke is building. But the thing with Jerry only does things first class.
There's no the practice first facility class. First class.
The star is off the charts. Everything he does, the maintenance in AT&T Stadium is phenomenal. You go to a stadium that's 10 or 15 years old, and boy, all of a sudden, you get a dumpster smell in the bowels of the stadium. This thing is like pristine. It's beautiful. And I have tremendous respect for him. The one thing about Jerry, and Jerry takes a lot of heat, obviously, because he's out there. He's bigger than life. But he's resolute. He what he stands for, he means it. He doesn't put on any airs. I mean, that's old Jerry Jones. And if I'm a fan of a team, I want an owner like that. He lives and dies with wins. And of course, he had tremendous success early on. He wins the three Super Bowls in 4 years. Now it's been a long drought in regard to that. But I've never seen an owner live or die more than Jerry does with his team.
You and Chris do a tremendous job. You've done a lot of Patriot games. Last year, there was, I wouldn't call it conflict, but Tom, for the first time, was with his documentary, voicing some concerns. I wish it could be a little more fun. Belichick, I've heard behind the scenes he's a riot, but when you sit down with Belichick and Brady,
yeah.
Are you surprised with Belichick's curtness and Tom's sort of optimism that it has worked 19 years?
Well, not really, only because, I mean, they're both really smart. They're both driven. They're different people, obviously. Yes. I would go back with Bill when I started Monday Night Football.
Yes.
He's the defensive coordinator for the New York Giants, so probably been in 100 meetings with him.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, you go back all the years we did the Giants, and then we even had some Browns games when he was there, and now we
How
do
How much
him.
Will he give you?
He gives you – it depends on the day, but you know, he gives us what we need. You know, the one thing about Bill is he'll be straightforward with you. You ask him the right questions, he'll give you the right answer. He also loves history.
Yes.
We got him going. We did the opening game against Pittsburgh a couple of Sundays ago. We got him going on the replacement players in 1987.
Yeah.
He was on Parcells' staff,
yeah.
And how much Parcells hated that. And Bill said, Belichick said, he's out there. He's going out to Long Island to try to find guys in playing on the street or in parks and everything. And he's bringing them in, and we even told the story on the air. So Bill's the defensive coordinator, and it's a situation where the opposing team, it's a Monday night game actually against San Francisco in the Meadowlands, and he's yelling out to the defensive end who's all tensed up and everything, and it's a 3rd and 29, whatever it is, and he goes, hey, loosen up. And the guy looks over at Bill like, what do you mean? And Belichick goes, loosen up. And the guy starts doing jumping jacks before the snap. So you get Belichick going on stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. It's great. You know, here's the thing. When people say, does he give you the game plan? We don't need the game plan. Chris Collinsworth
could
coach the game.
Yeah, his homework is
he could coach the game. He knows.
Right.
We don't need a coach to tell us. You can figure it out. And they're adjusting as well. And Chris adjusts as well. He sees everything. It's fantastic. I mean, once in a while, a coach will tell us, I'm going to throw the bomb on the first play of the game. Mike Shanahan was great. Shanahan said, you know, the opening play is going to be.
He would tell you.
60. Yeah, Elway, you know, he's got Elway. So the opening play is going to be 60 yards down the field to, Mark Jackson or Ricky Natil or somebody. He would say the opening play.
Right.
And after that, you can figure it out.
You've done, as I told the audience before you came on, I heard you first as a young kid. You were a young broadcaster doing Niner games. I was in Westport, Grayland, Washington, on the roof of my house with an AM radio. The Mariners weren't really much of a team yet, and they were on a Seattle station, and my town didn't get it. So I heard you on a San Francisco stick. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably KNBR at the time. Was it?
During those years, it was KSFO,
okay.
570 on the dial, San Francisco.
So I heard a young Al Michaels. You're very similar. Your voice is more, it's deeper now, obviously.
Sure.
And there's obviously the Miracle on Ice, which we've discussed. We have that's probably the greatest call in American sports history. It is. Let me play it one time. I like to play it out of respect for Al, because I know where I was. By the way, I was in a bowling alley. The game was not live.
No.
I was in a bowling alley. My mom worked at a bowling alley. She ran the kitchen in the bowling alley, and somebody came out of the bar and said, "We beat the Russians." And I remember they had green carpet was AstroTurf. It was not a high-end bar. It was not the Westin. And so I remember going home, and my mom let me stay up. So it's the greatest. They've made movies about it, documentaries. By the way, the Russian documentary.
Fantastic.
Is unbelievable.
Fabulous.
Here's the call. I get goosebumps every time I watch it. Here you go.
11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
It is, to me, the greatest call, and even to this day, the greatest moment. So take that out. Is there another big event that doesn't get the publicity that you felt that it had? It really will go down for you as the second moment that you really remember.
You know, I've got like two A, B, and C, Colin. I mean, the last four Super Bowls we've done on NBC have all gone down to the last 30 seconds.
That's because the Patriots are all.
They've been in three of them. But the one before that was Arizona-Pittsburgh.
Best.
I love that game.
Incredible
Super Bowl. Love that game. I mean, Arizona, what are they doing here? They fall behind. They come from behind. Larry Fitzgerald catches a pass. Arizona has the lead, 2.5 minutes to go, and then Roethlisberger leads them down the field, and Santonio Holmes makes the phenomenal catch to win the game, and that game also featured James Harrison going 100 yards at the end of the half. So he had two of the most iconic plays in history, and there of course, is the Holmes catch.
And by the way, you had the Steeler brand. In fact, I think, Joe, fantastic. You were on the show, I said this. This is the best Super Bowl that's never been talked about as a great Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was at the time, but now it's almost been eclipsed. We had the Malcolm Butler game, Seattle against New England. We had Philadelphia against New England, so we've done...
You used to do boxing, by the way.
In other words, 2A, B, or C would be... I did in 1985, Hagler-Hearns.
Lord.
The Ring Magazine ranked the first round as the greatest boxing round of the... of the 20th century.
You did it for ABC?
No, for ABC, but live on a closed circuit with Al Bernstein.
I know Al.
Only time I ever worked with Al Bernstein.
He's great.
How's that for doing it for our one-off? So I did that fight, and that was breathtaking. I was sitting there at ringside, and these two guys just, and it was a very hyped fight, and normally they don't live up to expectations, and guys come out and they parry and all that stuff. And then the two guys just met in the center of the ring and just wailed away at each other.
Yes.
Maybe the two at that point, best pound-for-pound fighters in the country. I have no idea how either guy survived the first round. The second round was pretty good, too. And then in the third round, Hagler was cut. So he's got to end this because the doctor's looking at him between the second and third round. It could have been a technical draw.
I mean,
he's bleeding. So he knew he had to knock Hearns out. It was 8 minutes of exhilaration. Sports Illustrated on the cover, I think the headline was 8 minutes of fury. So it's amazing. The great thing about sport.
Go by, you can, folks, you can YouTube this.
You can YouTube
it's
the fight.
It's an incredible YouTube.
It's, Colin, the great thing about sports is the World Series is like a 10 to 14 day feast. The Super Bowl is 3.5 hours. The NBA Finals are 2 weeks. Hagler-Hearns was 8 minutes. 8 minutes. I mean, think about that. I mean, I love doing, I've had a chance to do the World Series, the NBA Finals, and it's like a book. It's like a seven-chapter book. It could be as short as four. But Hagler-Hearns, I remember walking away going, oh, I had to catch my breath just watching this or announcing the thing.
Yeah, my first job out of college was Vegas, and I've told people this for years. For anybody in their 20s, the two things in sports you missed, and I've told you this, is Al Michaels doing baseball and when boxing was as big as the NFL. I'm not saying it was as broadly popular, but I can remember George Foreman, Muhammad Ali fought. I am watching a kid show in Seattle, J.P. Patches, and they break in to tell you that Ali's beat Foreman in Zaire. It was a children's show. So that's how big boxing was. Muhammad Ali, Al Michaels, 10th season together, Sunday Night Football. You know it's a pleasure.
Hey, fantastic. I love coming in. And by the way, it took me 12 minutes to get here. So
you're always welcome. The great Al Michaels.
Down
now, this
block.
Sunday, you've got Cowboys-Saints.
Cowboys-Saints.
New Orleans has good oysters. That's fun.
We'll sample those. Cajun or Creole? What do you prefer?
Creole.
Okay.
I don't think either are great for you.
But back and forth, yeah.
Al Michaels, great seeing you.
Colin, great to see you.
All right.